From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. One person was shot and killed and at least another wounded Monday after two people in a vehicle reportedly tried to ram a gate at Fort Meade, a military installation in Maryland that houses the National Security Agency, that according to officials reportedly having knowledge of the ongoing investigation. Authorities did not release any details, but law enforcement officials said that police officers with the NSA shot at two people in the vehicle. One of them was killed, according to the officials. There were no details immediately available on the condition of the second person. According to two officials, the men in the vehicles were dressed as women, but those officials cautioned that the information they were presenting was preliminary. Just before 11 a.m. Eastern Time Monday, NSA officials said they had no further information, and in a statement issued around 11:30 Monday, the FBI Baltimore office said it was investigating. As the fighting in Yemen continues, people on the streets of the capital city Sana'a had harsh words for the Saudi royal family as Saudi planes bombed the country for the fifth consecutive day.
I want to tell the king of Saudi Arabia to worry about himself because the Yemeni people are none of his business. Where is his shame? What does he want from the Yemenis? And what have we ever done to him? These attacks happened while people were sleeping. They are massacring people. People are mutilated. 11 people were killed here and nothing remained of them. They were picked piece by piece and were carried in bags.
We call on the Saudi kingdom to end this aggression. The victims are poor and innocent people, and the Saudis are brutally killing them.
Al-Quds is not here near the airport. Neither it is here in Sana'a, nor it is here in Yemen. Al-Quds is in Palestine. They should be fearful of Allah over the innocent blood being spilled like that of women and children. What is this disbelief? What is this cowardness? Why all this hatred against the Yemeni people?
Press TV's news director Hamid Reza Imadi said the raids being conducted by the Saudis are not being accurately characterized in the West, but rather are supporting Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups in that country.
It's very suspicious. What's happening in Yemen today is that the Houthis were trying to eliminate those Al-Qaeda forces that are allies of the ISIL terrorists that are well known to the international community right now. But the Saudi warplanes are attacking the same forces that are fighting Al-Qaeda. So that means that the Saudis are saving Al-Qaeda in a way from the Houthis and the Ansarullah movement that is fighting radical extremists in the south of Yemen. More importantly, the United States and some other Arab countries are supporting Yemen in this war on the Ansarullah movement. It's very much telling because these Arab countries, never did anything to support the people of Palestine when Israel attacked Gaza and killed women and children, and did not do anything to help those Palestinians who were getting killed by Israel. And now they're sending warplanes. Saudi Arabia is making a strategic mistake in the region. It is trying to save those Al-Qaeda and ISIL militants and terrorists from those Houthi and Ansarullah forces. This is a huge mistake because we have learned in the past few months from experience that those terrorists will definitely create more problems and crises in the region if they're not contained.
It's the sound of silence in the Western media after two UN agencies issued separate reports condemning Israel for massive human rights violations. Last week, the UN Human Rights Council issued a report condemning Israel's rights violations in Palestine's occupied territories. That report came in the wake of a resolution by the UN Commission on the Status of Women, which said Israel's illegal occupation of Palestinian lands was responsible for the grave situation facing Palestinian women. Press TV's Sarbaz Nazari has more.
Four critical resolutions during one session. The United Nations Human Rights Council in its 28th meeting passed four resolutions slamming Israel's rights violations in Palestine and other occupied territories. The Geneva-based body expressed deep concern about the systematic breach of fundamental rights of the Syrian citizens living under occupation in the Golan Heights. Council further noted that the expansion of settlements in the occupied territories, including East Jerusalem al-Quds, is affecting the civil, political, economic, social and cultural rights of Palestinians. The Rights Council resolutions came following another report by the UN Commission on the status of women. The report affirmed that the Israeli occupation remains the major obstacle for Palestinian women with regard to their advancement, self-reliance, and integration in the development of their society. The resolution also condemned the 50-day aggression of the Gaza Strip that killed and injured thousands of Palestinians, including women and children. Experts believe that these new UN resolutions have nothing new in them.
The Human Rights Council's actions are simply an admission of the obvious. I know of no one who's still mounting any serious defense of Israel's crimes, particularly in the Gaza Strip over the summer, as well as its ongoing settlement construction in the West Bank.
Washington and Tel Aviv voted against the resolution, and Palestinian women and the European Union members abstained. In the case of the Human Rights Council, the international media have largely remained silent.
The silence of the international community reflects loyalty that a large part of the international elite, the governing classes of North America and Western Europe, holds for Israel, the ties that connect them, and the networks that Israel has established, which ensure that these governments will continue to serve its interests, the Zionist lobby in the United States and elsewhere.
The Rights Council has expressed regret that the Israeli leadership has refused to cooperate with the United Nations over those issues. The Council has called on Tel Aviv as an occupying power to respect the rights of Syrian citizens in the occupied Golan Heights. It has said that based on international law, any Israeli laws are null and void in the occupied Syrian territory. The body also demanded the establishment of an independent fact-finding mission to investigate the implications of Israeli settlements on the rights of Palestinian people. Experts, however, say UN resolutions would remain ineffective because there is no international will to hold Israel accountable for its crimes.
It's hardly a secret that the United States has exercised its veto power within the Security Council more times than I can recall for Israel's benefit.
Observers believe as long as the U.S. is the last defense line for Israel, Tel Aviv will be kept protected against any serious repercussions of its aggressions and rights violations.
Thousands of supporters of the All Progressive Congress Party, Nigeria's main opposition party, held a protest against alleged voting irregularities in the country's general elections this past weekend and called for new elections. The demonstration, organized by the opposition, took place on Sunday in the Southern Rivers State's capital, Port Harcourt. The APC denounced the vote as a sham and charade, adding, quote, "Whatever trash will be announced as a result of today's election is not acceptable to us," closed quote. Abiyomi Ezekwe is the publisher of the Pan-African Newswire, an international news service covering the affairs of African people throughout the continent and the world. We spoke with him about the election in Nigeria and about Nigerian politics in general via Skype Monday. Abiyomi, the election was yesterday. The country is fairly well divided between regions. And then I guess there's a religious component to that also. And the insurgent party has already said that they are not going to accept the results. So what do we got there?
Well, it's a very important election in regard to Nigeria's history. Right now, the country is facing some monumental challenges. On the one hand, we hear a lot about the Boko Haram insurgency, which, of course, has escalated over the last 6 years. It is a conflict that is largely regional in its origin, but now there has been international intervention by Islamist extremist groups, Al-Qaeda, as well as the so-called Islamic State. At the same time, with the decline in oil prices, and Nigeria relies on the export of sweet crude oil for over 90% of its foreign exchange earnings, those prices have largely gone down over the last several months. In regard to that, also, it impacts the relationship that the Federal Republic of Nigeria has with the United States. Historically, they have been very close economically as well as politically. But in recent months, with the decline in oil prices, the U.S. is importing less oil from international sources, and fracking and doing offshore drilling and other forms of oil production on a domestic level. So the trade in oil between the Federal Republic of Nigeria and the United States has largely dried up over the last year. This has had a tremendous impact on the Nigerian economy overall. Now, the elections are a monumental task in a country of this size, well over 150 million people. At the same time, they've introduced this new voting system, and there's been problems associated with that. Some of the machines that they have that are designed to read the results of the elections have been malfunctioning, so this has required manual counting. There's also been complaints, particularly from the United States and the UK, saying that the tabulations of the results of the elections, there have been problems associated with it as well. The elections were scheduled to take place on Saturday, March the 28th. And as a result of the many problems in many parts of the country, in the South as well as the North, they have extended the elections through yesterday, Sunday, March the 29th. So it appears from some of the initial results that the opposition All Progressives Congress, headed by Muhammadu Buhari, who in fact is a former military head of state during the 1980s. He staged a coup against an elected government on New Year's Eve of 1983, served for about a year and a half, and he himself was overthrown by another military leader, IBB, that is Mr. Babangida, who ruled the country for another a number of other years. But the country has had a problem historically on a regional level because of the legacy of British colonialism. The North was largely divided from the South during the period of colonial rule, and that has still not been fully overcome, even though the country has been nationally independent, ostensibly, for the last 55 years. So everyone, not only in Nigeria, but throughout the African continent, and indeed many throughout the international community, are anxiously awaiting the results of these elections, which initially they said would be announced later on today, Monday, March the 30th. But there are also reports that the results may not be announced until tomorrow, March the 31st.
So, Nigeria has it suffers from one of the same maladies that affects a lot of other countries that are in tough straits now, like Iraq, and if the U.S. had its way, Venezuela, oil-producing countries. Its wealth is coveted by the West. It's been owned by the West largely over the years. And despite the fact that the U.S. is now producing shale oil for market, of course, the oil companies consider Nigerian oil theirs, and they help to make policy. So what do you think? Can you see the U.S.'s hand behind the scenes here? I mean, they're overtly talking about problems with the elections, but what are their interests with respect to the two candidates? And maybe you could tell us how those parties represent both maybe some of the foreign economic interests and also the domestic constituencies.
Well, both of the parties are both pro-capitalists. They're pro-Western. So from a political standpoint, there's really not too much of a difference between either of the parties. The All Progressives Congress, whose candidate Muhammadu Buhari has claimed that they will step up the attacks on the Boko Haram insurgents in the Northeast. But the People's Democratic Party, the PDP, which is the party represented by President, the incumbent President, Goodluck Jonathan, has already done that over the last several weeks. In fact, the elections were postponed for 6 weeks because of the monumental security problems that existed mainly in the northeast of the country. Also, the war has become more regionalized now because Chad, Niger, as well as Cameroon have also intervened militarily in Nigeria to assist in the fight against Boko Haram. Now, Boko Haram has been cleared out of a number of areas in the northeast, but it still remains to be seen if this is sustainable, because they can engage in other forms of insurgency and terror attacks against the population on an even more clandestine level, which they have been doing over the last several weeks. The United States is very much concerned about the future of Nigeria for the simple fact, as you mentioned, they have large amounts of crude oil. They are the most populous state in Africa. They were designated a year ago as having the largest economy in Africa. So they're very concerned about which direction the country is going to go in. Plus, the U.S. has been heavily involved through the United States Africa Command in regard to carrying out joint military operations and so-called counterinsurgency methodology in West Africa, not just with the Nigerian military, but militaries from Chad, from Sierra Leone, Liberia, and others throughout the entire region. So, yes, even though they are not buying as much oil as they had been buying from Nigeria, they still want a stake in the outcome of these elections, because you have the People's Republic of China, which has been stepping up its economic relations with the Federal Republic of Nigeria. And at the same time, China now is the largest trading partner with the African continent. So the real strength and weight that the United States has over the African Union member states is its military prowess and its so-called anti-terrorism operations, which are highly problematic as far as Nigeria is concerned. Even though the two countries have been close diplomatically, there have been intense criticism by the Goodluck Jonathan administration that the United States is refusing to sell them the necessary arms that they need, and at the same time to share intelligence that the United States has been gathering in regard to the operations and the movements and the positions and the bases of the Boko Haram sect operating largely in the northeast, as well as spilling over into Cameroon, in Niger, as well as Chad. So, yes, the United States is very much concerned about what is going on there. Now, they had concern and have expressed concern, but at the same time, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, has declared the elections as being free and fair. This is contradictory as well, because there have been many areas throughout the country in which complaints have been filed about the way the elections have been carried out, the lack of election materials, the breaking down of machines, the long lines, violence, even at the polls, attacks by the Boko Haram sect against the civilian population. So it's a lot of contradictory reports are coming out of the country since this election has been taking place.
And, it's been 20 years since Ken Saro-Wiwa was killed. And the world is somewhat different than it was in 1995. You do have China. I mean, on the one hand, you do have AFRICOM fairly entrenched now in African governments across 35 of the countries, at least, according to the last count that I saw. And U.S. interests, of course, being expressed fully that way, a resurgence of some of the other imperial powers, France in particular, reacquiring colonies from Cote d'Ivoire and Mali, and fighting that's been taking place across large swaths of the continent. But you also have China and Russia, the BRICS countries emerging. Nigeria last year surpassed South Africa as the largest economy on the continent, so the possibility of a Brinks, for example, exists. Is there a class of Ken Saro-Wiwas, or in any event, some folks there that are looking at the opportunities that Nigeria has on the new world stage for developing the country along a different model?
Yes, there are a number of trade unions, mass organizations inside the country that deplore the massive corruption that is still very much in evidence in Nigeria. They also oppose the increasing U.S. militarization of West Africa. And they're also looking at the fact that the massive environmental damage that has been done by the oil industry is still not being addressed, neither by the federal government or by the major oil corporations such as ExxonMobil, Total, British Petroleum, Shell, and others, which still have substantial resources inside the continent. But these corporations will not readily reinvest in the infrastructure of the country, cleaning up the environment, building schools, clinics, hospitals, roads, establishing clean water reservoirs and resources for the people in Nigeria. These are the real issues that the mass organizations inside the country are addressing. The electoral politics of the country is heavily influenced by money, and it's also heavily guided by regionalism. So that's why you have such a standoff right now, because there are people in the southern part of the country who do not want to give up the leadership of the state to those who are largely based in the north. The APC, even though it does have support throughout the country, is largely based in the northern regions of the country, and the PDP is heavily based in the south. So this could, in fact, create even greater tensions inside the country. And it has been rumored even since 2009 that there are leading political as well as military figures who are providing clandestine support to Boko Haram in order to undermine the Goodluck Jonathan administration, because it is based in the southern part of Nigeria. So these are open criticisms that have been made of the reasons why the military, which is heavily dominated in many cases by northern originated military officers, have not been as effective in curtailing Boko Haram activity in the Northeast. Only recently have we seen the type of offensive that should have taken place 4 or 5 years ago against these insurgents, who it is really not clear what they actually stand for. They claim they want to establish a caliphate, an Islamic state throughout West Africa. Initially, they appeared to be more of a indigenous or movement based largely in the Northeast on regional and religious grounds. Then, of course, it was announced by them that they were allied with Al-Qaeda. And I guess since now Al-Qaeda, according to the West, has been superseded by the Islamic State, they announced recently, a few weeks ago, that now they are allied with the Islamic State. So these are some of the dynamics that are surrounding the elections that are taking place. And despite who wins these elections, whether it's announced later on today, March 30th, or tomorrow, March 31st, it remains to be seen whether there's going to be stability in Nigeria. And it also remains to be seen if the new government or the incumbent government of Goodluck Jonathan will be able to address the massive economic crises facing the country right now. They're going to have to impose austerity. There's going to have to be massive cuts put in place because of the decrease in revenue as a result of the decline in oil prices. Now, the number one trading partner in the oil industry with Nigeria is India. It's no longer the United States. So it shows that the Nigerian government realizes it has to look eastward in order to try to stave off a complete economic collapse in the country.
And finally, are there any political figures on the ground who could appeal to constituencies in both the North and the South to sort of transcend the you know, that particular legacy of the imperial period and bring some sort of unity so that the problems of the country can be addressed?
Yes, they are. They unfortunately, they don't have the funding. They don't have the backing that the two dominant political parties have. You know, it's quite similar to what takes place in the United States. Looking at it from afar, you would think that there's only the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in existence in the United States, because they get all the media coverage. All the other parties are considered fringe or lunatics or irresponsible or not serious. But there are elements in Nigeria, among the working class, among the farmers, and among the youth, who are concerned about the direction of the country, who are concerned about the need for national unity and broader regional as well as continental unity. However, the assets associated with controlling state power are so enormous that this is a tremendous motivating factor for these parties and constituencies allied with these parties to maintain the status quo. So we'll have to see if that's going to change after these elections, because it has to change because of the economic crisis that's looming in Nigeria and consequently throughout West Africa as a whole. Also, you have increasing dialogue with the government in France vis-a-vis the Goodluck Jonathan administration as it related to the security situation. Francois Hollande did attend a 50th anniversary commemoration of a 55th anniversary commemoration of the Nigerian national independence earlier this year and pledged assistance on the security front with the Federal Republic of Nigeria. Of course, this remains to be seen what they're actually going to do, but it indicates that with the U.S. Cutting off its imports of Nigerian oil, that France sees this as an opening for itself to come in and develop relations with Nigeria, because France, as well as the United States, is increasing its military interventions in West Africa. We saw what happened, for example, in Mali, where there was a French intervention as a result of the takeover by separatists and Islamic insurgents in the north of Mali. We've also seen in the Central African Republic that France continues to try to determine the overall political structures and political direction of the Central African Republic. In Cote d'Ivoire and Ivory Coast, France intervened 4 years ago and overthrew the government of Laurent Gbagbo, sent him away to the Netherlands to stand trial. His wife, the First Lady, Simone Gbagbo, has just been convicted and sentenced to over 20 years in prison by a French-backed regime in Ivory Coast. So, yes, all of these imperialist powers are vying for control over resources and also the military affairs of Africa in an effort to stave off greater cooperation between Africa and China, and also the emerging economies. You mentioned BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are, you know, coming to the fore, and they are, in fact, trying to consolidate these so-called emerging economies to lessen their dependence on the United States, on Britain, on France, and on the NATO countries in order to build some type of genuine economic growth and development in the global south.
Okay, Abiyomi Ezekwe, publisher of Pan-African Newswire and the host of Pan-African Journal on CPRMetro.org. Thank you for your time and a pleasure as always.
Thank you.
Due to time constraints today, we'll have our regular report on the case of Lorenzo Johnson tomorrow. And now this, we have a report that Mumia Abu-Jamal was rushed to the hospital and is in a critical condition. Mumia's family and friends are very concerned about both Mumia's health and about the kind of treatment that he's going to get from the state of Pennsylvania. Noel Hanrahan from PrisonRadio.org called the report in late Monday. She was en route to the hospital, and she said more information will be available at the website PrisonRadio.org late Monday or early Tuesday. And we will continue to follow this as it develops. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.